Mr. Haig, reel 11.
And then when you come down again there, someone say, "You've done some foreign star thing." "Why, what's the matter?" "Well, can't a bloke just talk to someone else without someone poking their noses?" The innocents abroad.
How much of a problem was homosexuality in...
No. Of course, you used to get a lot of these people, same as they did with the old pros. I mean, say, if you listen to the mess deck, the island where 9 people went with someone one night, but I mean, say, you never believe it. Of course, I mean, see, the punishment for homosexuality was too stiff for anything to, you know, to let things off like that. I'm not saying it didn't go on, but I mean, see, you never heard it, I mean.
You never certainly saw it as a major thing. What about a problem like venereal disease?
Well, of course, I mean, see, that was very odd. I mean, so you used to get the people give you lectures on that. Of course, even before the First World War, you know, they started on it. And used to give you preventives if you went down to sick bay for them.
Gambling wasn't encouraged in the messes.
No, gambling was never encouraged at all, because they always believe where there's gambling, there's thieving.
But you did get the old school.
Oh yeah, oh, they used to play nap and all that luck, but
not for money, as a rule.
Oh yes, 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 they used to play for money. You know, on the scorecard, you used to tick up the score and settle up afterwards.
How much sort of money? I mean, what sort of sums would it involve?
Well, generally, halfpenny nap or something like that. Unless, of course, during the war, I mean, it's the First World War, I mean, say, you couldn't spend your money. You know, in the album hall, all you had was a bit of canteen, and it soon ran out, and nothing. Well, what could you do with money?
What about Carl and Anchor as a game?
Oh, well, of course, I mean, say, that was frowned on always. I mean, say, the odds against you winning anything at Crown Anchor are so great that only a mug plays it, except for odd bits. But I did very well once with it when I was on a St Vincent and a Portland. We was going ashore, and Cousins used to run paddle steamers, you know, and they used to run from Portland round to Weymouth, threepence return. So you go ashore like in the afternoon, and they run one at night for people who come off at night and 7 o'clock in the morning. And that was threepence return. Or else you went ashore in Portland and went round by train. That was threepence return to Malcolm Regis. But anyhow, I was in the Cousins' steamer, and I think it must have been end of 1913 or beginning of 14. A new class of cruiser had just come out, light cruiser. There's Southampton, Dublin, and a lot there. And we come away from our ship, and we pulled alongside the Dublin. And as we did, I looked on the quarterdeck, and there was this damn great shamrock painted up. And I thought, well, it's there, let's try it. And I put me on. I think I had a shilling. I was going to cost a shilling. You could get a good run ashore then. Oh, I put me shilling down on this club, and it come up, and I hit 30 bob when I got ashore.
How did the Cape current anchor, in fact? What was the actual way?
Well, you've got this board laid out. You've got art spuds, clubs and diamonds. You've got the crown and anchor. You're 6 foot, 6 spaces. You've got 2 dice. Or perhaps only 1 dice, and you shake that, and whatever it comes up, so they pay out. So he's got 5 to 1.
Yes, during the war there was much more.
Yeah, see, because the money couldn't be spent, and you've got a big fleet. Mind you, I mean, say, you come to work it out, we had about 10 battle squadrons then. There's a lot of ships. And then you had the battle cruisers, the heavy cruisers, the light cruisers, destroyers.
And all these men with money and wages. Mm-hmm. And it led to but there was a punishment. I mean, if you were
Oh yes, if he was caught, I mean, it was it's on the corner. How the bloke looked at it, see, 42 days detention some of them got for that.
How did the other sailors treat somebody who had a coat and anchor board and was taking the others to the cleaners?
Well, I may say, very likely they was very envious. But then they had that idea, contrary to the naval regulations, nine times out of ten, the bloke would run the crown anchor board, would lend you a quid for 25. So you lend you a quid, you pay him back the first of the month, like 25 bob. Well, I may say, at 25% prof, I may say, not worth laughing at, is it? Same as you would get a sum in the old days, or before the Navy and Army Canteen Board took over, when they had private canteens. You could write out a chit on your canteen chipbook, one black pot, and take it up, a quid, and you'd borrow it off a canteen manager. And see, you'd have a black pot.
So you took that back?
Huh?
You took it back, or you...
No, no, see, you just give him the chip, one black pot, just so that on your what name, you've got something, if anybody, when you investigate your account, one black pot, a quid.
What else? What other ways was there of raising money if you were in a hurry or needed it?
Well, I may say, that was all the illegal ways I know, and that was definitely illegal. Of course, yeah, regulations distinctly say you must neither borrow nor lend.
And would you get men who had won a lot, or men who had lost a lot, rather, at Crown and Anchor, who might want to get their own back, and the man with the board?
Well, I suppose it did happen, but I mean, say, I was never with anybody who had all that much.
Recreation. We decided that sailors weren't greatly for hobbies, I don't think. They weren't great hobbies.
Well, you had macrame and fret work and things like that aboard the ship.
Yeah.
But, I mean, say, of course, before 1914, sport was something apart. I mean, say, that was nothing at all to do with the Navy.
What about in the off-duty hours in the mess? I mean, how would men spend their time then?
Well, writing letters, mending the clothes, perhaps doing a bit of washing, playing uckers or something, or spinning dits. Sometimes you get the mess lick painted blue. Mm. Well, you used to get some succulent ones, you know. He's down there.
And going on from that sort of area to outer sports like regattas and so on, you weren't a great one for boat pulling because you had had a very nasty experience. Would you tell me that again, the one about the...
Well, it was the Glatton. I forget when it was, 1918, I think. She ran Dover. Just at 4 o'clock in the evening, we were going out on dark patrol anyhow, and all of a sudden this blasting burst into fire. And they had a damn great paraffin tank alongside the funnel, and of course that didn't improve matters. Of course our yeoman was up there and he said, "Way lifeboats crew," without thinking. Like, of course we all got in the lifeboats. And in the swift we had two gigs, two whalers, a dinghy and a motorboat. And we lay like here, and there was two big monitors. I think it was a General Wolfe and Marshal Ney, I'm not certain. But anyhow, two big monitors laying in between us and the Glatton. We had our six boats alongside the Glatton before they had a boat in the water. And as I say, it wasn't until you got alongside and thought about things you realised what a blasting fool you was to jump in the boat. And of course you pulled backwards and forwards with survivors to the hospital ship. And then Admiral Keyes hadn't long come round there then, or had he? I don't know now. Anyhow, he was there. He come round and he said, "Clear away, all clear away." Also our navigator was aboard the Glatton. He was directing people along to get out. Of course the mess deck was running with oil on a fire, and people didn't like walking through it. Anyhow, he was ushering them out, see, and we was picking them up and taking them to the hospital ship. And then Roger come down, he said, "Clear away." And of course, we got old King Armand down out of it, into the boat, shoved off. And as soon as Roger Keyes turned his back, we went alongside and he went in again. Of course, that didn't improve the vitality. Anyhow, in the end, he said, all right, clear the armour, all ships out. Because he was afraid he was going to blow up. And if she'd have blown up, she'd have cleared Dover, because the old cliffs were black with people watching this lot. Anyhow, all the ships went to sea, and we had to follow them. And by the time you'd finished pulling backwards and forwards to Dover Harbour, then had to sick and weary with boats pulling for a long time.
But you also saw some rather ugly sights then too, didn't you?
Oh, yes, terrible, yeah. Things. We had one Marine come aboard. All he had was a bit of blue jean off a navy flannel. That's all he had on. Burnt. He got in the boat, he sat down. Someone gave him something to put over his shoulders. He said, got a fag. Someone gave him a fag and lit it. He had two or three puffs of it and then chucked this coat or whatever it was he had on. Went straight over the side and underneath his monitor. We never see him anymore.
He was very badly burned, with burnt face.
And burnt face and no air. I mean, so, you know, nothing round about him. All burnt. And I mean, so you get burnt round there, it's no pleasure, is it? No, you see a lot of them. Of course, then you had the brudgy lot, and you say, phew. You could smell that vindictive after that, you know, you could smell
it. Tell me about that again. Huh? Tell me about the vindictive.
Well, you say, well, you know, there's the brudgy raid. Mm. Well, we was at, actually, if it hadn't been for the fact that we took such a big turning circle, we'd have gone inside that harbour to torpedo lock gates. But see, we couldn't, we had to take a big circle for turning in the Swift. And consequence, we didn't. And the Phoebe and North Star got that job. And anyhow, the Vindictive went on the mole. And next morning, she could smell it where she had burnt flesh and all, because she had flamethrowers on. And as the people come to get on her off, their fingers are still stuck to the blooming what name it off. Well, so I was the bloke who fired the maroon to recall him off that exercise.
Yes.
We had this damn maroon, like the life-saving maroons, you know, go up and explode coloured stars in. And this thing fitted on the signal locker. Special it was. Oh, I said, what's that for? Oh, the bloke says, well, he said, that's for special use, he said. You'll get told what to do with that. It had a long lanyard on. Oh, anyhow, we, as I say, we was at Brudgy and at Ostend, and that was a failure because they didn't seal it up properly. Mm. And anyhow, when the time come to recall them, got the signal fire this maroon, was mugging fire, I thought them. Thought the whole lot had gone. Well, you know, get explosion there and another one up there. I wonder what on earth had happened.
What, in the diary there, you know, you described the events of the war very well, but before you told me that when you heard that war had been declared, 1914, that you felt that you were going to buy your ticket.
Before then,
indeed. Yeah.
Yes, I was going to buy me a ticket, but I'd had enough. I mean, see, I couldn't see anything in it. I mean, see, you know, the way he was treated, less than the dust beneath the chariot wheels.
They were going to take your way out, in fact. Mm. Well, before 1914, I mean.
Yeah, of course, and the commander of the good hope said to me, he said, look, he says, you don't want to buy yourself out. He said, wait till after the mobilising, he said. I'm going out, he said, perhaps I can give you a job. No, I thought, well, what a month won't matter. It did, though.
It did.